This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com.
This past weekend, I went to the Women's March in Washington, D.C., and it was interesting, right? Mm. So I decided to go to the march this year, number one, because I was like, we clearly have not achieved equality yet. So I think I'm going to go there. Number two, I was disturbed by all of the news stories about the divisions and then the splintering off and like the different organizations that were now taking this on, with one being seen as, you know, as the organization for women of color and the other one being seen as the organization that's against anti-Semitism, as though the two cannot coexist. So I was like, okay, fine. I'm going to put on my marching boots and I'm going to show up. Pretty much just simply as an act of solidarity. And in some ways it felt like a space of solidarity, but there were also some troubling things, right? Mm-hmm. Or rather things that troubled me, right? So the first was still the preponderance of anti-Trump signage at the march. And here's the thing, I thought that it was established that just about everybody marching in those marches was anti-Trump. So can't we move beyond that, right? Because if this is a women's march and this is a march about gender inequality, gender violence, whatever, right? I mean, it's not like Donald Trump got elected and then all of a sudden these things started to exist, right? So he just seems like a perfect straw man. And so that signage bothered me because it was so negative. And I was like, let's see a little bit more positive stuff. And then second, and I didn't know how to, like, I was ambivalent about this. So number one, there's a huge diversity at the march, right? In terms of the types of women's groups, the types of women, like the types of issues, right? And in some ways, that was amazing to see, right? But then in other ways, at one point in time, I was confused. I was like, what are we doing here again? Why are we here again? When are we going to organize around a platform? Or is that not what the march is for? Maybe the march is really just meant to be this moment where we can feel safe in a mass together. People were having a really good time. People were really jazzed up once we walked past the Trump Hotel. And, you know, people got into it with the pro-life protesters at the edge. For the most part, people seemed to be very happy to be there, even on such a cold day. In truth, I left right after the march. I decided not to stay for the rally because, number one, I'm a woman and a sociologist, and I think I kind of know what the issues are. The whole thing about the leaders of the march, like, I don't even see them as leaders. I see them as the people who take care of the logistics, right? Get the permit, tell me where to show up, and I'll show up. But I don't see you as a figurehead, right? You were not Martin Luther King, right? You were the people who make the march possible. And I don't feel as though we have someone who's emerged like that for women in the march at this point in time.
Well, do you think that the leadership should step aside then if they're causing division and they're not integral to the movement? Should they find different people to file the permits? And
my whole thing is I'm agnostic about it, right? And this is why. The reason why I'm agnostic about it is because the people who invited, what's her name, Tamika Mallory, to be part of the Women's March from the beginning, knew about her ties to the Nation of Islam and Louis Farrakhan then. And back then, they saw it as a good thing, right? And then something happened, right, to then make them see it as a bad thing. So that's
is that for sure? Like, where'd you hear about that?
Yeah. So I heard about, so number one, if I knew that that Tamika Mallory like had ties to Louis Farrakhan before they even invited her, I don't understand how the women who decided to invite her didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand why they were like, oh, the Million Man March, if that's going to be a model. Right. I mean, that was led by Louis Farrakhan. Right. If you want someone who has a totally different perspective than I do, then okay, right? And from what we know, she doesn't seem to be anti-Semitic. She just happens to have links to this guy. So, I mean, so that's that, right? Mm-hmm. And so if that is the case, my whole thing's like, why was it okay for her to be part of the leadership then, but then it's not okay to be part of the leadership now? And, you know, and also number two, I also don't understand why she would still want to lead something that isn't really about something yet. I feel like she, you know, I mean, she could go do something else. So I think it's up to them to make that decision. As I said, I was like, I wasn't there for the leadership, regardless of who they were. I wasn't there to hear anything they had to say. I was there to actually be in a space to be with people who I assumed were all in for the cause of gender equality.
Like I was supporting the splinter groups only because like my reaction to Farrakhan is very negative, right?
Oh, I get you. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's, you know, he targets my ethnic group with hate speech, so it's So I remember we had this discussion. Like, I would expect people to react to a. If an organization was led by someone who worked with David Duke, or, you know, I would expect people to react in a particular way, and I would expect that similar reaction for those who work with Farrakhan. What do you think about like the idea that just because a leader associates with Farrakhan, you know, the march is ripe for boycott, like? Should we boycott things that are associated with white nationalist leaders as well? Or is it something where just because someone is tied up with a white nationalist or an anti-Semite, we shouldn't blame people for the company they keep?
Well, I don't know. Like, as everyone who has been talking about it has said, including one of the women who supposedly said that, or supposedly charged Mallory with anti-Semitism, she herself said, look, that relationship is totally complicated, right? Mm-hmm. And part of the relationship is that, you know, her husband got murdered and Farrakhan like came and took care of her and her family. And he basically acted as a mentor, right? And helped to make sure that she didn't break apart and her family didn't break apart, right? And so that's why I made that comparison last time when I was like, oh, so what are you gonna do? Not invite Uncle Bob to Thanksgiving dinner? Right. You know, with the difference being that maybe Uncle Bob doesn't have a platform where he speaks to thousands and thousands of people, but he still holds like very nasty, very ugly beliefs. Right. Mm-hmm. Should I, if I were your friend, for example, and I knew that you still invited your Uncle Bob to Thanksgiving dinner, should I tell you, well, you either have to disassociate yourself from your Uncle Bob or we can't be friends anymore? I don't know.
What if I invited David Duke to dinner?
Are you, so is David Duke your uncle?
David Duke, no, David Duke and Farrakhan I see as analogs.
Well, you know, there's a real life example, counterexample to this too, if you think about it. You know, I think having sort of the public, having the public platform is sort of the key variable here too. When you think about Obama and was it Jeremiah Wright, his pastor?
Oh yeah, Reverend Wright. Yep.
He denounced him. So there's two cases, I guess, to juxtapose against each other here, right? I don't know where I, you know, particular opinion one way or another on this, but at least in terms of a of two cases.
So I'm happy that you brought up that comparison, right? Because I actually, because I know that they, on the surface they seem the same, but I really don't think they are. Like, I think of the Reverend Wright as being all, like, he's squarely, like, in the tradition of Black liberation theology. And I actually think that a lot of the footage and the tapes that they have of him, like, those were totally taken out of context, right?
Yeah.
And so those were taken out of context, but then Obama was like, which is going to be easier to like try and explain to the American people that these were taken out of context and this is actually what he means, or just throw him under the bus. I'm going to throw him under the bus. Well,
I think that's the more fundamental point I was trying to get at is really sort of here of the context of it. And I guess this got back to our earlier discussion too, in talking about the events,
the MAGA, MAGA thing.
But in the sense here about it's perhaps it really is all about public interpretation of an issue just as much as sort of the substance behind the individual, right? In the case of Obama there, right, as you said, just something here taken out of context, but yet the public conceptions have consequences in essence. It's the same thing that occurred here in terms of being identified with Farrakhan.
Yeah. And also too, I mean, and then going back to Joe's point though, right? So again, like in thinking about leadership, like, you know, I mean, like people are a little screwy, right? I mean, like a person could think that what it is they're doing is for a bigger cause when they're really doing it for their own kind of personal like power or fame or whatever. Right. And part of it, so I could see how Mallory might be thinking to herself, like, I'm gonna sort of stick to my guns because I care about this cause and that's what's important. And I've been able to bring all of these different people to the table. I'm not going to get scared out of leadership, right? While at the same time, she could also, in saying to herself, this movement means more to me than anything else, also look at it and say, huh, maybe by me being part of the leadership, I'm actually, I'm hurting the movement. So I don't know, like, I'm not her, right? Yeah. If I were her, I think I would have stepped down from leadership. But I can't speak for her. I wasn't in that room when those alleged conversations took part. So,
Howard, do you want to touch this with the 20-foot pole or?
Well, I mean, when I look at the Women's March and I look at the issue, I think of just contemporary mobilization more generally. So I kind of look at it, you know, not only at the lens of the controversy, but just the difficulty it is today to create a movement. You know, unlike the age of Martin Luther King, where there were churches and clear kind of oriented goals, we now have a society that has so many micro subdivisions to it that it's really hard to get, a broad march on something that should be widespread, that, you know, women of any faith, of any color, of any class are facing a number of similar issues. I mean, certainly there are differences when you look at those intersections, but it's very hard to mobilize people in one continued space. And I just think of what, you know, as Leslie was saying, like, why do people show up to the march? And they show up not for necessarily the specifics, and you see this in hashtag movements as well, that they're responding to the broader issue, and everybody comes there with a different set of reasons. And so I find that, you know, when I kind of look at the Women's March, and this year there were fewer people than the last few years, I just think of just the difficulty of trying to get people to share a space and share a common goal.
Hmm. Can I ask a question to Leslie and Howard on this? Something that struck me too is what I was wondering is you know, I've heard the criticisms of intersectionality as sort of in terms of a political rhetoric. Are we seeing that sort of here? The criticism being such that it can get away from fundamental issues and it's so focused on cleaving by different sorts of intersections that ultimately it pits groups against each other ultimately because of these I'm of this and this and this versus someone is of this and this and then in terms of identity or ideology or what have you. I mean, is this an empirical case to be thinking about how an intersectional sort of a political orientation ultimately in a way divides and conquers, or in terms of thinking about mobilization for a greater good? Or,
well, certainly it creates complications. I think of the Toronto Pride March, where divisions ended up emerging between Black Lives Matters and the organizers of the march, and it led to a protest in the march that shut down the march. And it was a matter of intersectionality. And I think it's important to kind of look at intersections and the differences that occur within causes and movements. But certainly, taken to its extreme, it becomes me first politics. And over the last 5 or 10 years, this is kind of the politics that we've been promoting, not just on the left and in terms of movements, but the mainstream politic as well.
Yeah. And in me thinking specifically about the women's movement, right? I mean, and thinking about intersectionality, I mean, historically speaking, it, like, the movement was not a space where many women who weren't cisgender, who weren't heterosexual, right, who weren't white, and who weren't at least middle class, felt like they had a space. And even if they did have a space, they were there merely for the optics. Like, that's what they were valued for. See, we have diversity within our movement, but their voices were not valued. And part of me kind of feels like, you know, maybe instead of thinking about this as like negative and being like, oh, it's so fractured, look at this, there is no one voice, is maybe what we should be thinking about this is like a movement or a newer movement in its infancy, which is allowing everyone to like sort of be seen and be like, oh, this is what it feels like to be seen. This is what it feels like to be heard, right? Mm-hmm. And once we get it established that like, okay, everyone, you see, you all got to have your say, you all got to be seen. Now that we've established like a certain baseline level of equality, maybe now we can get to the table and actually start like hammering out what this agenda really looks like.
I would agree with you, Leslie, that, you know, a successful movement is a movement that's able to have humility and that's able to kind of go through the stumbling blocks of figuring out what that common space is and being inclusive, because certainly this is a problem with a lot of movements that it excludes people at the cost of the goals that it says that it's trying to pursue.
Mm-hmm. But ain't I a woman though, right? I mean, that's the question, right?
Exactly.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.